Why did Al-Qaeda choose to attack the World Trade Center and not some other facility, September 11, 2001? Well, it was because the Twin Towers there in New York City were the most visible symbol of Western imperialism and materialism. Our commercialism symbolized by those towers to the radical Islamic world. Are we materialistic? An extensive survey conducted by the Higher Education Research Institute found that 85.8% of incoming college freshmen say their primary goal in life is getting rich. 85, almost 86%. That's a 43% increase over what the typical college freshman thought in 1967. According to research collected by the McNeil-Lehrer Generation Next Project, 18 to 25-year-olds listed the following as their top life goal. Be rich, 81%. Be famous, 51%. Help people who need help, 30%. Be leaders in their community, 22%. Become more spiritual, 10%. Are we materialistic? Yes, we are. In Revelation 18, we learn that God judges man's materialism. Revelation chapter 18, let's begin with verse 1. After these things, John writes in Revelation 18, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illumined with his glory. Materialism addicts the human soul, first of all, continuing in verse 3. And he cried out with a mighty voice, saying, Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, and she has become a dwelling place of demons, and a prison of every unclean spirit, and a prison of every unclean and hateful bird. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the passion of her immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed acts of immorality with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich by the wealth of her sensuality. All right, let's review briefly. Revelation chapters 17 and 18 are a piece. They are together. They are stories, if you will, about a woman dressed in scarlet riding upon a scarlet beast. They are allegories because God is teaching lessons through these stories. They're figures of speech, if you will. They're not literal, but they have literal meaning because they teach us lessons that we need to understand. The woman, we studied last Sunday, Revelation chapter 17 and verse 18, is Babylon the city, the great city of Babylon. And I told you last Sunday that I believe the city of Babylon will be rebuilt and become the geographical center of Satan's last attempt at world domination. More importantly, though, ancient Babylon in what is modern-day Iraq today, ancient Babylon became the symbol of all that is opposed to God and to God's ways in the Scriptures. In Revelation 17, Babylon is the symbol of false religion in this world. She is the mother of idolatry. And we explored the biblical background from all of the Old Testament, or many of the Old Testament passages related to the city of Babylon, and how she is frequently pictured in the Old Testament as the mother of idolatry, the source of all false religion in this world, and so she becomes that symbol. So God judges false religion in Revelation chapter 17. But in Revelation 18, Babylon, the city, is the symbol of materialism. She is the queen of luxury and all that money can buy in this world. And God judges materialism in Revelation 18. So the angel cries with a loud voice, announcing the fall of Babylon here in chapter 18. Now, false religion in 17, but here in chapter 18, the symbol of worldly decadence, the capital city of materialism, if you will, in this story, this vision. This center of luxury and pride will fall one day, God says. It will become the dwelling place of demons, unclean spirits, haunted by vultures and scavenging beasts. All that luxury, all of that decadence will become desolate. It would be perhaps something like God saying to us today that Las Vegas or New York City will be so desolate that the only inhabitants will be demons and vultures, never to be rebuilt. That's the message about this capital city of materialism, this queen of luxury. Why? God tells us in verse 3. There are three reasons. First, the nations of this world have drunk from the cup of her immorality, God says. The people on earth have become addicted to the wine of her sensuality, the cup of her decadence, if you will. Second, the kings have pursued her seductive powers. The political leaders of this world have made materialism their god. They have sought financial prosperity as the goal of national pride. Third, the merchants of the earth have become rich out of the powers of her luxury. Materialism has made the business leaders of this world wealthy. So those are the three reasons why God will judge the queen of luxury. The entire world has become addicted to materialism. The political leaders focus all of their national efforts around materialistic and economic and commercial goals. And the merchants, the businessmen and women of this world are getting rich from the queen of luxury. So God will judge the queen of luxury, materialism, he says in chapter 18. What is materialism? The dictionary defines materialism as attention to or emphasis on material objects, needs, and considerations with a disinterest in or rejection of spiritual values. I don't really have to tell you sitting in this room, I don't think, that our culture is oriented around materialism using that definition. Spiritual values are treated as peripheral, secondary, tertiary, you know, maybe not even of something that anybody in this world ought to think about as people pursue all of the other goals of life as being far more important. We are certainly a materialistic nation. Our political leaders make economic prosperity the measure of national success. They rise and fall on our national product, on our consumerism. Our business leaders are getting wealthier and wealthier while the poor in our country are getting poorer and poorer. And I'm not the only one to say that. You may have seen the article in the Portland Press Herald last weekend, headlined, Maine Floats Tycoon's Boats. It's all about how the Maine coast is a paradise for the rich and wealthy. That's really nothing new. It's been that way for 100 years now, perhaps. The article said that the boat building industry in Maine continues to grow because it specializes in high-end boats. While the sale of cheaper boats is on the decline, the sale of million-dollar yachts is on the rise. The article went on to say that never in our nation's history have there been so many rich people to buy these boats. The top 1% of earners in America receives a bigger share of the nation's income today than at any time in our history since the 1920s. And they are spending money on things like $3.5 million yachts built here in Maine. But, folks, materialism infects us all. We're all a part of that process. And it's largely a trickle-down process, perhaps, but we're all infected by it. In 1955, the largest soda McDonald's restaurants offered was 7 ounces. That was the largest one. In a little over 50 years, it has swelled to 6 times that size, 42 ounces for Yugo now. The largest one. So 400 and some calories just in that one drink. In this slide here, we see a comparison, and I'm not trying to make you hungry this morning, but we see a comparison of 2 large drinks from a competitor, Burger King. The one on the left is a large drink that is sold in the United Kingdom. That's the size of their large drink from Burger King. The one on the right is the large drink sold in America. We have quite a thirst. And our thirst gets greater and greater. We're getting thirstier and thirstier. I think that's a great illustration of materialism. For materialism never satisfies. We want more, we want more, we want more. We're thirstier and thirstier. It addicts the human soul, so we need more to be satisfied. Second principle, avoid the addiction or suffer the consequences. Revelation chapter 18, verse 4. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that you may not participate in her sins. This is the queen of luxury now, the scarlet woman here. And that you may not receive of her plagues, for her sins have piled up as high as heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Pay her back even as she has paid, and give back to her double according to her deeds in the cup which she has mixed, mix twice as much for her. Now, he's addressing probably the kings of chapter 17, because it is the beast and the 10-nation confederacy that actually end up destroying the queen in chapter 17. So he is commanding them, for God puts it in their minds to do this, to carry out this task. To the degree that she glorified herself and lived sensuously, to the same degree give her torment and mourning, because she says in her heart, I sit as a queen, and I am not a widow, and will never see mourning. For this reason, in one day her plagues will come, pestilence and mourning and famine, and she will be burned up with fire, for the Lord God who judges her is strong. So John hears another voice out of heaven calling God's people to come out from Babylon, the queen of luxury. By the way, that tells me that even in the final days of Satan's kingdom here on this earth, there will be believers alive in the very capital city of the Antichrist, for Babylon is the capital city of the Antichrist, the beast's kingdom, as we studied last Sunday. And there will be believers alive around this world during those final days. And God addresses them here and he says, come out from that city, come out from that queen of luxury and all of the materialism and all of the comforts of that capital city, because I'm going to judge it. And you need to come out before I judge. More importantly, the message is for believers of all ages, certainly in John's day and ours, not to partner with the world in her materialism. If we partner with this world in her materialism, then we will be partners in her suffering as well. For God will judge the materialism of this world. God says that her sins, the queen of luxury, have literally been glued together until they reach all the way to heaven. The time is up. And God will judge. And we as believers are to come out from her before it is too late. Now, when God calls his people to come out from her, the language recalls a very familiar Old Testament story to the first century believers, and perhaps to you as well. It goes back to Genesis chapter 19, because in Genesis chapter 19, we have the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. And the same language was used in Genesis 19 for Lot and his family. God said to Lot and his family, "Come out from within her, leave the city, because I am going to judge the city of Sodom with fire." And you remember the story. Lot and his family were the only righteous people in that city, and they came out of that city before God destroyed the city with fire. Lot's wife came out of the city, but the city did not come out of Lot's wife. She was reluctant to leave the materialism and the comfort of her life there, and she took one last longing look at what she was leaving behind, and God turned her into a pillar of salt. Come out doesn't mean just physically coming out. It means you must come out of that mindset, that mentality, that addiction to things and the material prosperity of this world. So it is with us today. God calls us to come out from the materialism of our world too. He doesn't mean that we somehow leave this physical world. We will one day when Christ returns or when we die, but we can't do that right now. He means that we must not let this world and her materialism grab a hold of our minds and our decision making so as to influence the way we live and think. Now, I personally think this has to be one of the most difficult or greatest dangers we face as believers in our world today. It's so subtle, and every one of us face this struggle every day and every week. You know, our normal pattern is to compare ourselves. Well, I'm not as materialistic as so-and-so over there. Well, maybe not. But materialism is still infecting us, every one of us. We struggle with it all the time. And I think it is especially true for our young people. The influence of materialism is so seductive. We have to have the right clothes, the right things. We got to look right, be right, have the things that fit us in with our culture. We want and we want and we want. We buy and we buy and we buy. And we get and we get and we get. And all of this getting and all of this buying fills our wants. But we become addicted to the materialism of this world. And we're not happy unless we have these things. And if we can't have them, then we're unhappy. But the problem is, when we do have them, what? We're still unhappy because we need more. That's the nature of any addiction. It is the addiction of things. Maybe you've had this discussion. We have it periodically in our house every once in a while. Let's discuss the difference between a need and a want. Do you ever have that discussion? Isn't it interesting how often wants become stated as needs? Well, I really need this, right? Really? Is it a need or a want? But it's so subtle, isn't it? And it's not just teenagers, folks. We're all that way. Our wants that we state as needs just get bigger and more expensive as we grow older. It is the addiction of things. God calls us to come out from the grip of things and money and possessions, or else, he says, we'll suffer the consequences coming to this world system. The voice from heaven now commands that the woman be paid back for her sins. The woman is pictured as the queen of heaven, who glorified herself and lived luxuriously. We talked last Sunday about how the Queen of Heaven in the Old Testament was the god of Babylon. started in the country and of that area and in the city of Babylon. And the queen of heaven was the mother of idolatry and all who worship her. Well, now we see that materialism is also aligned with the queen. But now it's the queen of luxury, and this queen sits up there and says, I have it all. I am a queen, and I will never be a widow. I will never suffer. I will never have problems like the rest of these people, for I have it all. What arrogance, right? Yet it is precisely the arrogance of every materialist who put their faith in corporations and salaries and 501(c)s and stock markets and a host of other supposedly indestructible and insured financial institutions. There are many who think they're safe. In pride, claim to be above all the struggles, safe from financial disaster. We'll be okay. We won't suffer. Yet God says that He will judge the prideful materialists one day. To the degree that they thought they were safe, to that same degree, they will suffer loss. The punishment will fit the pride. The truth is, folks, that there is not a corporation in America that could not fall overnight if God decided to liquidate her assets. Not one. There is not an executive, there is not a bank account that God cannot bankrupt if He wants to bankrupt it. Gone, just like that. But how many people live like that? Very few. Even as Christians, we don't think that way, do we? No one is safe, and no amount of money can make you safe from the judgment of God. For as the text says, the Lord God is strong, He is mighty. Far stronger than anything of man. It can be all gone just like that. So the angel pictures a materialist who lives luxuriously at the expense of the poor who suffer terribly. The rich materialist thinks he's safe from the suffering of those he exploits. He thinks that he has money because of, you know, his superior skills or his work ethic. And that they are poor because they just don't have my talents, or they don't work as hard as I do. And if they'd work harder, they'd be rich too. What arrogance, God says. So often, it is the richest who care the least for the suffering of the poor. Or they might make splashy headlines every once in a while, but really care the least. So often it is the wealthiest who are the stingiest when it comes to helping those in need. Perhaps you noticed the news article this week about the estate of Leona Helmsley, the Queen of Mean, she was called, for her wealth in the hotel industry. She left $12 million of her estate in a trust fund for her dog, while two of her grandchildren got nothing. Every year, Forbes magazine posts a list of the world's wealthiest people. According to their most recent study, there are currently 946 billionaires in the world. Aside from Warren Buffett, who gave away $44 billion last year, they only donated 1.2% of their earnings to charitable causes. 1%. God will judge the materialist one day. And when God does, the world will mourn the loss of her luxuries. All of this stuff is going up in smoke one day. Now, the bulk of this chapter, from verse 9 to verse 20, is taken up with three great funeral laments for the burning of the city of Babylon. This center of world commerce goes up in smoke. And with her go the hopes and the dreams of many in this world whose futures are tied up in the markets that Babylon controls. The first lament is raised by the kings of this world. The kings in these chapters represent the political leaders of this world. And these political leaders have so aligned their nations with the commercial prosperity of Babylon at the end of this age that their whole future now is going up in smoke as the city of Babylon burns. Now, these are not the same kings who, with the beast in chapter 17, destroy the city as Satan seeks to bring people to worship him. These are the other nations who have tied their national security to the coattails of the banking, industrial, and technological center of materialism. We live in such a global economy already that we can see how whole nations could become dependent on the financial prosperity of a few institutions. So that when those financial systems fail, the nations themselves fall apart and the political leadership falls apart. These political leaders, you notice in this chapter, if you read it, and I'm not going to read through the text this morning because of time, but let me tell you that these political leaders do not come to the aid of Babylon, the great city, the commercial center. They don't come to her aid. They stand afar off. And they weep and they wail and they say, "Oh no, it might happen to us. We don't want to get too close to this disaster in the world." The second funeral lament is raised by the merchants, the business people in this world who have become wealthy from the financial institutions that have been established. What happens to corporations when nobody buys their products? What happens? They fall apart very quickly, don't they? In this global economy, at the end of this age, when the city is burned up, literally the profits of the global corporations go up in smoke as well. And there's a long laundry list in verses 11 through 14 of items in first century terms, if you will, for that's all John could possibly have understood, that suddenly the merchants say, nobody's buying these things anymore. Nobody wants them. Nobody has the money to pay for them. And the wealthy weep and wail because their profits have gone up in smoke because nobody can buy their products. All this inventory and no buyers. The third lament is raised by the ship's captains and the sailors and the workers, those who support the system. You see, ultimately involves everybody, doesn't it? Because we're all part of that materialistic queen of luxury. They too grieve because their livelihoods are going up in smoke with no one to buy the products. There's no market to ship the products, and so no jobs for those who work in the market and in the shipping industry. So you can see how the failure of the global economy can quickly destroy everyone, from political leaders to business executives down to the laborers in the system. I mean, we have only to think in our own history back to the era of the Great Depression here in America. But apply that on a global scale now to get the idea of what could happen, since all of the financial institutions are increasingly tied together in the worldwide markets. All of it, the stuff of our lives, the stuff of our world, is going up in smoke one day. In 1 hour, the prophet says, it's all laid waste. It's gone. Can you imagine everything, all your financial security, all of the stuff that you rely on for security in this world, all of those risks gone just like that? That's what God says will happen one day just before Christ returns. Gone. Casino magnate Steve Wynn, who owns casinos like this one in Las Vegas, had purchased a Picasso oil painting titled The Dream, which Picasso completed in 1932. In 1997, at an art auction at Christie's in New York City, Steve Wynn purchased the painting for $47 million, one painting. His purchase actually turned out to be quite an investment, however, because in less than a decade, in 2006, Wynne completed a deal to sell the painting, one painting, for $139 million, tripling his investment in less than 10 years. This transaction would have set a record for the sale of a piece of art in the world. I say it would have, because just as he was completing the deal with the buyer, Wynne, who was standing closest to the painting, turned and inadvertently clobbered the Picasso with his elbow, placing a 6-inch hole in the middle of the masterpiece. While no one is certain what this does to the value ultimately of the painting itself, the effect on the sale was immediate. Even more quickly than it had come, the record-breaking $139 million sale evaporated, just like that. So it is with all that this world offers materially. Really, there's nothing in this world any different than that ultimately. It can all be gone just like that. Why do we live for it then? Why is it so important? The world will mourn the loss of her luxuries. Finally, those at the top fall the farthest. Verse 21. And a strong angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, "Thus will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence, will not be found any longer, and the sound of harpists and musicians and flute players and trumpeters will not be heard in you any longer, and no craftsman of any craft will be found in you any longer, and the sound of a mill will not be heard in you any longer, and the light of a lamp will not shine in you any longer, and the voice of the bridegroom and bride will not be heard in you any longer, for your merchants were the great men of the earth, because all the nations were deceived by your sorcery, and in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all who have been slain on the face of the earth." So a strong angel lifts a large millstone, throws it into the sea in this vision, in this story. It is an illustration, a symbol, if you will, of how suddenly and completely God can destroy the financial and commercial center of the world. Just like that. Just like that millstone, God will throw down the city of Babylon and it will be found no longer. Now, it is a picture consistent with the Old Testament prophecies. I mentioned these last week. Jeremiah in chapter 50 and 51 prophesied against the city of Babylon. And I personally don't believe those prophecies of Jeremiah have yet been fulfilled, which is why I believe that Babylon, the city, will ultimately be rebuilt one day as the symbol of false religion and materialism in this world, the commercial center of this world. In fact, we know, by the way, that Saddam Hussein was attempting to restore the city of Babylon to its former glory when he was suddenly cut down by our armed forces. So the financial and commercial center of this global economy at the end of this age will be destroyed, God says, so completely that there will be no more musicians, no craftsmen operating in the city. There will be no industrial activity. There will not even be any lights on in the city. Weddings will no longer take place. It is as if all the music and the shops and the activity of the French Quarter in New Orleans was suddenly under the floodwaters of Katrina. Gone. Or perhaps we might think of Las Vegas collapsing into a major fault line as an earthquake destroys it completely, only that it will never be rebuilt, God says. You see, the queen of luxury and all she stands for goes up in smoke. Why? Well, God lays out three reasons. in that final verse. Reasons for her judgment. First, the mother of materialism will be judged because her businessmen and women were the great men and women of earth, and they were celebrated for their power and their influence, and in their pride, these businessmen and women thought that they were greater than God, or at the very least, that they didn't need God anymore. That's what materialism is. Second, the judgment comes because all the nations of this world were infected by the seductive sorcery of materialism. And third, God judges materialism because those who promote her are the same powers that kill the prophets and the saints of this world. They don't fit with the agenda of the world, so they are killed. That has always been true for believers down through the centuries. And God says that he will judge the materialists for their treatment of his people down through the centuries. The great danger for all of us is that we can become addicted to the seductive powers of materialism in our lives. I like what Joe Stoll says. The real point of materialism is not how much we have. You see, a person with a lot may not necessarily be as much of a materialist as a person with a little. It has to do with something much more subtle than that. The real point of materialism is not how much we have. So don't look around and say, you're a materialist, you got that car, you got that house. That's not the point. But what has us? It's not what we hold, but how tightly we hold it. Not what we have, but how we got it. The test of materialism is whether our goods have made us proud or grateful, self-sufficient or God-sufficient. Do you see the difference? God can give us many things. In fact, he does give us many things. And he gives those to us to enjoy and to use, to invest. It's not what we have, but what has us that is the issue. So how can we fight against this subtle power of materialism in our own lives, the grip that things and money can get on us? Let me suggest four ideas as we close this morning. First, remember who owns it. Whatever we have is not really ours, is it? God owns it. God owns it all. He just lets us enjoy it and invest it for him. Now, if we start with that mindset, it helps us tremendously. Second, give to the kingdom. For God gave to us, and it's his, so give to his kingdom work, invest in God's work in this world. I really think that the minimum that Christians ought to give is at least 10% every year of what we have. And giving away or investing what we have in the kingdom of God is one of the best ways to fight materialism in our own lives. You know, if we as Christians gave at least 10% of what we have, my goodness, what that wouldn't do in this world for God's kingdom. And it's a great way to fight the materialism that gets a grip on our lives. Third, say no just to say no. Sometimes it's a good idea to avoid buying something we want, not because we can't buy it, not because it's wrong to buy it, but just because it's a good discipline to say no once in a while to what we want. Fourth, serve the needs of others. There's nothing like serving others to change our mindset about what we have. Instead of hoarding, serve. Instead of hoarding, give. That's why short-term mission trips have a great impact on people. But folks, we should apply the same principle of service right here. It's not just in New Orleans. We don't have to go there to be service-oriented in our lifestyle here. What would it be like to go through an entire year and not buy anything new? Well, that was a question a small West Coast group of environmental activists asked themselves a year ago. Now, these aren't Christians, these are secularists. And at the beginning of 2006, 10 friends asked themselves that question, and they declared a sabbatical from American consumerism. The compact, as they lightheartedly called their agreement, bound them in a mutual pledge to abstain from shopping sprees and other trappings of modern culture. Other than food, essential toiletries, underwear, and other purchases that fell under the categories of health and safety that they laid out, the friends purchased nothing new for a year. And they learned a lot about themselves in the process. After going through a time of what they called retail withdrawal, they were amazed at how the items they needed just showed up somehow, or could be fixed, or could be remade into something usable as they shared and interacted with one another. Sounds like a good thing for church. Sounds like the first century in Acts. 26-year-old Rachel Cassell added, "I found that a lot of times there were things I thought I needed that I didn't really need that much. Rediscovering the library, paying down credit cards were two of the unexpected dividends members of the group experienced. 42-year-old John Perry said, "One of the byproducts of the compact is that I now have a completely different relationship with the things in my life. I appreciate the stuff I have more." The group so enjoyed the freedom from their compact in 2006 that they have chosen to renew their pledges for 2007. What about us as believers? How do we fight materialism in our lives? Father, this scarlet woman, this queen of luxury, is so seductive. She captures us so easily. We find ourselves thinking about what we want, this or that. I'd like to have this. This would be great. And then those things become, I need this and I need that. Lord, help us to fight that urge toward materialism. Help us to remember that it is all yours, and to thank you for it in gratitude for all of the wonderful things we do have, and to invest ourselves and what we have, what you have given us, into your kingdom work, I pray. In Jesus' name, amen.